Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast, monthly album roundup for the months of June and July 2020. I'm your host, Robert, and hell yeah, season 2 close enough! Thank you, HBO. And with me, I have...
Greetings and welcome to an LGR... Welcome back, Troglodytes, to your daily dose of guitar info... I am an original bastard, goddamn.
And...
Okay, yo, we got some A24. I mean, come on, we got some A24. Like, can we, like, me too? Come on, man,
Yeah.
Okay, A24 taking us to a animated pilot of Hazmat Hotel, which I did see. I say it's okay. I say I like that other pilot better, the one with Richard Horowitz in it, which.
Hazmat Hotel is the thing that everybody loves, hates, or doesn't know anything about because all that exists is a pilot, and that's apparently enough to get everybody talking.
Yep. I know nothing about it. I've just seen lots and lots of cosplays of it. But this is not a Hazmat Hotel podcast. This is a music podcast, specifically an episode where we're talking about albums and, oh boy, will this teach us to ever think that skipping a month is a good idea? July, what the fuck were you hiding up your sleeves?
Everything, apparently.
lots of stuff.
Yeah, because we were just looking at the release schedule, like, you know, there's not much going on in June, maybe not much will happen in July. We can afford to skip a month and, you know, compartmentalize all that, and then everything happened in July.
Yep.
Bitch.
Yeah, even albums that from artists that I forgot exist, you'll find out later.
Yeah, because we got no time to waste, so we might as well jump right into it by recounting what exactly the fuck came out these past couple of months, and there was quite a bit. So, starting off in the realm of rock, indie, punk, folk and country, etc., there was a new album from Bob Dylan with Rough and Rowdy Ways, a new project from Willie Nelson, First Rose of Spring, Kansas... apparently had a new album, The Absence of Presence, and The Pretenders 2 with Hate for Sale. Now that all boomers are out of the way, let's go on to stuff that people under the age of 40 normally listen to. There was a new album from pop-punk acts Neck Deep with All Distortions Are Intentional, and Newfound Glory with Forever and Ever X Infinity. There was also apparently a new Bush album, The Kingdom, as well as the newest album from Chester Bennington's old project, Grey Days with Amends. There was a surprise new release from 90s alt-rock icons Hum with Inlet. Jenny Beth of Savages making her solo debut with To Love Is To Live. A new album from Margot Price with That's How Rumors Get Started. The Chicks, formerly known as the Dixie Chicks, with Gaslighter. A new album from Kruangbin with Mordecai. Haim with Women in Music Part 3. Hines with The Prettiest Curse. Remo Drive with a new album Portrait of an Ugly Man. Proto Martyr bringing their newest album Ultimate Success Today. There was a new Neon Trees album, I Can Feel You Forgetting Me. And last but not least, a new Alanis Morissette project, such pretty forks in the road. Now we move on to the realm of metal and hardcore, starting off at the top for you new metalheads out there. There was a new Mushroomhead project, A Wonderful Life, as well as the newest album from Static X, Project Regeneration Volume 1. There was a new Einciferum project, Thalassic, as well as a new covers album from Inter Arma called Garber's Days Revisited. There was the newest album from 16 with Dream Squasher, the full-length debut of hardcore supergroup End with Splinters from an Ever-Changing Face, a new Make Them Suffer album, How to Survive a Funeral. There was a new Buried Tomorrow album, Cannibal, apparently a new Amir project called Hindsight, the debut full-length from the band Foxjaw with Royal Swan, a new Boris album simply titled No, a new Trash Talk EP called Squalor, Jesu coming out with a mini LP called Never, the newest full length from avant-garde black metalers Imperial Triumphant with Alphaville, Haken finally coming out with Virus after like 4 delays across the past month or so, the much anticipated return of the Ghost Inside with their new self-titled album, the Acacia Strain with Slow Decay, Protest the Hero with their newest project, Palimpsest, and Lamb of God with their self-titled new album. Now in the realms of hip-hop and R&B, there was a new G-Eazy project, Everything is Strange Here, a new album from Kyle with See You When I Am Famous, there was a new project from Smoke Perp with Florida Jit, a new Gucci Mane compilation, So Icy Summer, a collaborative EP between Lupe Fiasco and Kalen Ellis called House. There was a new Flappish Zombies EP, Now More Than Ever. A new Wale EP, The Imperial Storm. And Six Lax dropping the six-piece hot EP. Come on, man, only six-piece? You're not going to go 10-piece? Come on. IDK dropping IDK and Friends 2, the Basketball County soundtrack. Currency and Harry Fraud collaborating on a new project, The Outrunners. West Side Gun with Fly God is an Awesome God 2. Mike with a new album, Way to the World. Arm & Hammer with their newest project, Shrines. Chloe and Holly with Ungodly Hour. Teyana Taylor with The Album. Apparently there was a new Black Eyed Peas project, Translation. A couple of posthumous records here, the posthumous Pop Smoke record, Shoot for the Stars, Aim for the Moon, and the posthumous release from Juice WRLD, Legends Never Die. We already talked about this last month, just to get ahead of the curve, but Run the Jewels with RTJ4, of course. Logic, with his apparent final album, No Pressure. And last, but certainly not least, Beyoncé's contribution to Disney Plus with the visual album Black is King. And now in the realm of pop, electronic, and other, we have the newest album from producer Arco with Kick I, or I think Kick 1. Not just Volume 1, but a Volume 2 as well of Mike Shinoda's new Dropped Frames album series. Yeah, that second part apparently snuck up on us. New Juliana Barwick project, Healing is a Miracle. The new album from Nicholas Jarre with Telus. The EP New Rave from David Guetta and Morten. A new Ellie Goulding project, Brightest Blue. John Legend with Bigger Love, BTS with the Japanese album Map of the Soul 7 The Journey, and of course the biggest album that dropped in the past couple of months, one that caught the world by storm and sold tons and tons of copies. I am of course speaking of the Dalai Lama's debut full-length album Inner World. Also, apparently there was a new Taylor Swift album called Folklore or something. Who the hell is Taylor Swift? I don't fucking know. So, yeah, there was a lot. A lot of it that snuck up on us. Seriously, how the hell does Mike Shinoda drop two albums in, like, the span of a month or so? But that's neither here nor there, so we might as well get this Dog and Pony Show on the road. So, Alex, care to kick things off for us?
Yeah, and that whole rundown makes me realize I totally forgot about that Incifrom album. But I guess it can't be too bad of a thing, because scrolling through my notes, I have... technically speaking, 19 albums here.
But that is a new Alex record.
But, I'm not going to go over all of them in great detail because, well, I do like to keep my stuff under 20 minutes or so. And a lot of these, I don't really have a whole lot to say, especially since four of these albums are demo drops, hint, hint. So, yeah, may as well get started here and ramble on with my very wild tastes in music that I will not go too deep into because I like to save my fuller thoughts toward the end of the year, so just consider this first impressions, as always. Anyway, Elle Goulding, Brightest Blue. For some reason, I felt like giving this album a listen just on a random impulse. It's like me wanting... blueberry bagels with cream cheese. I don't know why I want it, but I just do.
Now I want a blueberry bagel.
I had one before we got started, and it was delicious. I don't have a whole lot to say about this album. The opening track start is a steady, slow burn of a moody ballad with some questionable pitch-shifting vocals, but the line, "You fuck with me, I'll start a war..." That's a good line right there. The rest of the album is... it's alright. More of a downbeat pop album than anything else, but... it's not bad. It's just sort of there. I don't know why it's split in two parts, with the second part being five tracks that were released as one-offs. One of which involves Sway Lee. Weird, but... it's not... that bad. It's all right. A good choice on the In Absentia color scheme on the album cover, though. White and blue, it works out pretty well. All right, now for the exact opposite of this album. Lamb of God's new self-titled album. You want something confrontational? This is it. laying out an album with an MO of, yo, this shit is fucked and we gotta tackle it all head on. I mean, it's heavy. It's Lamb of God. Art Cruz fits in like, what would be a good analogy to make? I would say Art Cruz fits in like a warm pair of socks out of the dryer. Yeah, the only thing I can think of. Okay, scrolling through the tracks. Yeah, it's for Lamb of God. It's always a good thing. Reality Bath is probably the hardest track, directly confronting the ever-prolonged issue of school shootings, where it keeps happening and nothing gets done. I wonder why. Complete with an outcry to reject the new abnormal, which is what we've been trying to do for the last few years, but... Sonically, this is a very solid album with the best batting average from this band, I'd say, since Sacrament, maybe? But that does come with the notion that even though Art Cruz fits in with Lamb of God and sounds just like Lamb of God, it can feel like it's just more Lamb of God, you know, the problem. Not a bad thing, but it's also just kind of there. It's more of what you'd expect. Nothing really groundbreaking, but it's not terrible. Oh, a special mention goes to On the Hook for being basically a better version of Checkmate without the typical nonpartisan, oh, both sides, am I right? If you can't tell, we're all still in hell. Okay. And because I have my notes organized in a very poor way, now I'm going to talk about the group formerly known as the Dixie Chicks, just the Chicks, with their first album in... how long has it been? 14 years? Jeez. Gaslighter. And yeah, a name change and a very generic one at that, but at least this doesn't have any lawsuits attached to it. Yeah. So, Jack Antonoff, at the helm in the producer's chair for this album, gives it much more of a really pop flair, which actually works well with the country twang that this trio is known for. And the last time we heard from this trio, they were pissing off the Vocal Defense Force a good old W. But I'll give him some credit. At least he was freaked out enough over a possible pandemic that he put in the work to establish a ground for prevention and action. A whole lot of good that's done for us. Thanks a lot, John Bolton. And hey, at least he reads, so it's something. And now in the year 2020, there's a lot to talk about. Although with this album in particular, with the backstory behind it, it's mostly kept in the micro, with personal issues on the title track, Sleep at Night, and Hope It's Something Good. But it does take a dip into the macro, aka everything, namely on the track March March, with the line, standing with Emma and our sons and daughters, watching our youth have to solve our problems. Again, we're in hell. Isn't it lovely? Now, while sonically this album carries a lot of country elements into a more contemporary pop sound, only without the terrible shortcomings that have befallen acts like Sam Hunt and friggin' Florida Georgia Line. No, we're not talking about that song. You can't make us. Don't let the album out fool you, though, because beneath that colorful first impression, there is some venom to be unleashed. And that's how I like my country music to be, full of piss and vinegar from someone who's really pissed off. Mostly at their cheating spouse, which is always a fun time. You know, beating them down verbally, not, you know, the cheating. Be faithful out there, kids.
Have some integrity.
Yeah, like us. Not much, but some. All right, speaking of happy times, The Acacia Strain. Their album, I'm putting in quotes because it's more of a compilation than anything else, Slow Decay. Y'all like piercing extreme metalcore that's on the verge of deathcore? Then you should know what to expect from this band. interesting approach to release 10 of the tracks as split singles, but hey, what do I know? Yeah, when combined, it's more of that The Acacia Strain goodness that's coming with a heavy dose of we are all fuck and it's all our own fault because, well, you know.
It kind of is.
Yeah, I mean, you can't get any clearer when the final track is called Earth Will Become Death. And there are tracks on here that are directly calling out idiots on Facebook and the goddamn boomers, so yeah, it's a fun time. If only more of the old people could listen. All right. And speaking of fun times, I don't know where I was going with this, but Gray Days, Amends. I'm not sure how indicative of this band this one album is, but if you told me that this was an album from like the mid to late 2000s, for the most part, I would have believed you. There's a strong groove-driven active rock sound that kind of dips into alternative that carries through most of the album. It's very solid, but it does have a strong sense of somberness to it, given Chester Bennington, y'all know. Yeah. It can go from being very hushed and morose to piercing and fierce, like on the track Just Like Heroin, but it doesn't feel too out of place with one another. And I can now say with full certainty that B12 was by far the wrong choice for a leadoff single. There is so many more better tracks on here, like every other track on here is better. There's also a good amount of piano used in this album, especially on Soul Song and Moray Sky, which again are more stronger songs. The point is, if you look past that one single, you will find a very strong album hidden beneath. So, yeah, good stuff. All right, this next one was a bit more of a critic's choice album. Neon Trees, I Can Feel You Forgetting Me. So I checked it out to see what the fuss is all about, and yeah, it's pretty all right, with the solid consensus being that this is a better 1975 album than what the 1975 put out. And it's certainly more consistent and coherent, and is thankfully only 34 minutes long across 10 tracks. That's a good thing. Less is more. It's definitely more pop than alternative rock, but it's not to a detriment, with a good amount of 80s synth pop being used as sort of a basis, like on Skeleton Boy. The only real point of comparison I can put this against would be Spanish Love Songs, but while that was all about the wider scope of modern life gone wrong, this is much more focused on a personal scope of modern life gone wrong. Macro versus micro, again. I still think the former is a better album, but this one here, it works very well as a solid pop rock album that could be making some year-end lists for sure. Not sure about mine, but this year's been chock full of surprises. Alright, now I'm going to quickly go through the stuff I don't have a lot to talk about because I don't have a lot to talk about. First, this Beyoncé project on Disney Plus, Black is King, which I've since found out is basically a visual reinterpretation of the Lion King, The Gift companion album that came out last year. I'll just say it's a better interpretation of The Lion King than the friggin' Lion King remake.
Yeah.
And if there's one word I can use to describe this album, it would be culture. This album is chock... This film, I guess you could say, is chock full of culture. From the indigenous to the wealth. Everything in between. Complete with life lessons from The Lion King by way of, well, the track samples. So, you know. Although I will say Jay-Z looked like he wanted to be anywhere else during his shoot.
Oof.
I don't know if he looked tired or bored, but yeah, I don't know. But yeah, it's good. If y'all have Disney Plus, go check it out. Apparently it'll be the first of a planned 3 projects that Beyoncé's going to be doing for Disney Plus. So more to come soon. You never know. Yeah, all right. Now for the Bulb demos. So far, there are 4 demo compilations out from Misha Mansour Periphery. Y'all can go and pick and choose whatever you want to listen to from this and hoist above the best of them. It's got riff demos, shit takes, Final Fantasy VII Worship gear tests. It's all there for your enjoyment. And there are like 4 more to come, too. Yeah. Okay, now for the Shred Feast EP from Jared Dines. Hey. Y'all like Shred? Y'all like Gent? Y'all like both combined with a ton of features? What are you doing listening to it already? It's only 20 minutes long. And it's got, like, all the YouTube guitarists on there. Even Rudy Iobe. Okay, now for this volume 1 and 2 of Dropped Frames from Mike Shinoda. Electronic hip-hop albums done via Twitch streams with sidebars into retro video game music, with only one track being a hip-hop track and the rest being instrumental. That's a concept, all right. Not bad, but not great, great. It's okay, though. Okay, now for a fantastically named album from Boris. No. This album is a portal to the darkest depths of hell. Only if Hell took a lot more influence from Rancid, with a lot more noise to it, along with, you know, the usual sludgy doom stylings. I don't have much to say, except it's good. Buy it off their Bandcamp already. And now for Alanis Morissette, Such Pretty Forks in the Road. The first new album for her in 8 years, and...
Damn, that long?
Wow.
Well, I gave it a shot, but... I don't know. Maybe there's just too much piano, too much sounding like a musical, but... This didn't do it for me. At least there's always Jagged Little Pill, so, you know. Happy endings.
Yep.
And now I come to the 3 big ones of this past period. First, Haken Virus. Hey. The best way I can describe this album is that this is a prog metal fan's prog metal album, taking the most key elements from across the genre, you know, more contemporary styles like you expect from Animals as Leaders and Tesseract, with a good amount of Dream Theater and Devin Townsend influence in parts. Like the opening track, it sounds very much like an early DTP track. Kind of like Truth. I don't know, maybe. And it also comes with unleashing one of the most consistently solid prog albums you'll ever hear. You have your heavy bangers at the start, some more melody-driven tracks to smooth things out in the center. And then there's the Messiah Complex Suite. 5 tracks of some frantic as all prog metal, that is, well, prog metal in all the best ways. With plenty of little Easter eggs for the more diehard fans to pick up on. I'll have to come back to you later on the whole Cockroach King, though. I'm still trying to figure out this grand concept of theirs.
Yeah, you gotta go back a couple albums for that.
Yeah, I'm sure it's gonna be fun. Next up, the last time I talked about this man, I was very not complimentary to him because Confessions of a Dangerous Mind was garbage. Yeah. But here we have the supposed, because never say never in the industry, final album from Logic. No Pressure, back working with No ID on this album, along with 6, because old habits die hard. And it does feel like, in a lot of ways, meant to be a proper companion and successor to Under Pressure, only, well, obvious path of fame and success, both good and bad. I think last year was just him having an early midlife crisis, because, well, he's gotten better. He's gotten better. Yeah. Now, given how his last album went with me, I came in feeling a bit hesitant. However, I am glad to say that through a tighter lyrical focus and a shift in production, Thank You No ID, along with some stealth cameos along the way from the likes of Keenan Ivory Wayans, Juicy J, Steve Bloom, and David Hayter.
Yeah.
I would say best album since The Incredible True Story.
Yep.
And apparently, according to a note at the end of the second track, this album was written over the course of 1 week and merely created in just 4 studio sessions, but perfected over the course of the year that followed. Coming from Annalise, who is, in a way, the narrator of sorts, because, well, leitmotifs, I guess. Lyrically, this is much, much stronger than the previous album, combining elements of its usual braggadocious attitude, like on the tracks Perfect and Celebration, that one with the line, "I'm Spike Spiegel, but I'm known to be vicious." Like, that's a good line. Ooh, nice. Love him or hate him, that's a good line. But there's also a very strong sense of grounded brevity, like on the tracks GP4 and Open Mic Aquarius 3. And it's here where the two sides of Logic's musical identity finally work together without one being disjointed over the other. That may have more to do with Logic becoming a father recently, and, you know, we joke about, well, he's going to be a millionaire Twitch streamer and all that. Stepping away from the music industry to focus on family is a big move and very commendable. The track Dad Bod explains it all, really, talking about, yeah, I'm done with the rap game, it sucks, now I'm going to go be a dad and buy stuff at home at Target. Isn't that the dream right there? Then there's the closer, Obediently Yours, the final track on this final album, speaking out over all of the shit we've been entrenched in over the past while, and serves as a bookend of Orson Welles soundbites that, in short, say racism is fucking bullshit.
Which it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Orson Welles told y'all right in the 40s and you didn't listen to him. Dumb bastards. It is a rather poignant way to close out this album. It doesn't linger on for too long. It's not super, quote-unquote, epic or eye-opening. It's just solid messages being conveyed solidly. That's the word I keep coming back to. Solid. This is a solid album. The most solid album he's done in years, and a bit of a high note to go out on. So, yeah. Good on you. Good on you, Mr. Bobby. And this brings me to the big one. The one that, well, caught everybody off guard because, really, who could have seen it coming? Taylor Swift, Folklore. Yes, while we have this ongoing pandemic and everyone is locked down, Taylor Swift put together a surprise album that in only 1 week sold over 800,000 units here in the U.S. alone and had every track debut on the Hot 100 in, as the kids say nowadays, an album bomb. My own thoughts on that whole concept aside, whatever. So my curious self just had to see what the fuss was all about. Turns out this is not your typical Taylor Swift album, because this features a lot of input from The National's Aaron Dessner, and it has a more downbeat, indie, alternative, and even folk approach to its arrangements. Like, there is no sugar here. This is sugar-free, whole grain,
whole wheat?
Special K, yeah.
Okay.
Huh.
Yeah. Subdued electronics, soft piano keys, conservative acoustic guitar work, and more reserved vocal deliveries that have practically no bombast to them. I can make the comparisons to, like, Lana Del Rey, Billie Eilish, maybe Fiona Apple, but I'm not here to really do a deep dive into the inner workings of this album, whether or not it's coming from sincerity or through marketing, because, like, who really cares anymore? You know, just as long as we're keeping the friggin' Rainbow Snitch away from the top spots. I don't care what you do, Taylor. If you prevent him from reaching the top, then you've done well.
Yep.
Anyway, so yeah, chalk it up to this garbage fire of a year affecting all of us, but this album has that very down and everything is shit vibe we've all been feeling. But that's kind of why I like this album. I can't tell you how sick to death I am of hearing the same homogenized pop song structures that paint themselves to be, you know, happy and bubbly and calling for everyone to dance and party. Or the exact opposite, trying to do the same structure, the same electronic trap beats, the same bullshit meandering in the lyrics. Especially as each period in time tries to hop onto the trend of what's the in style. It just shows a major inauthenticity to whatever's being created. It's like Stephen Wilson said, miserable music makes me happy, and conversely, happy music makes me fucking miserable. That's not to say this album is a morose death march, though, especially with that very black metal album cover. But what it is, it does feel very authentic, real. Probably the most real album Taylor Swift has created in at least a decade, if not ever. It's such a stark departure over this massive persona and identity that she's carved out for herself, all without trying to be a prototypical pop diva or being super colorful to the point of repulsion, like on that last album. I remember the VMAs quite vividly. I wish I could forget. So yeah, this album, it's just, well, Taylor Swift without the stage and fluff. Which, as it turns out, can be a pretty solid singer-songwriter album. So yeah, it gets a thumb up from me. It's perfectly all right. I like it because it's different. That's the best way I can put it. Oh, also, Bon Iver is on a track, and it's fine, I guess. Not much else to say about that. So yeah, 19 releases, all talked about in one way or another. I'm going to go pass out now.
You know, I was wondering if any of us took a chance on that Taylor Swift album, and now that mystery is solved. But anyway, time to move on from that to the next part here. So, Mark, lay it down on us. How big is your stack here?
Well, frankly, I just chose 12 albums because I'm not a monster. And I'm going to say this now, I don't have no load on the load wise because I was going to talk about the G-Eazy album, but then I thought, yeah, I forgot. Both either on purpose or accidentally, because either A, I just forgot about it, or B, I'm not talking about G-Eazy, so fuck that shit. But since one album that, well, Alex took most of the part on is, first I'm talking about this last, or maybe last, I don't know, last Logic album, No Pressure. And yes, this is a very solid album. A consistent solid album, which, yes. Well, yeah, this is him. Back what made him so interesting when it came out. Like, yes, no, it's a sequel to Under Pressure. And I gotta say, it goes back to that style that he brought. But of course, he mentions, you know, all the geeky shit with the cameos by, you know, David Hayter, Steve Blum, and Keanu Wayans, which, oddly enough, like, you hit at one point, he says, message, that's actually from Don't Be a Man, it's South Central Watching Juice in the Hood. You know, that old parody movie, that old Wayans Brothers parody movie, that parody to the movies.
That feels like so 90s. Long ago, jeez.
Yeah. I've seen that title a lot. That's the got title seen like a piece of cake. Like he said before, like, I saw tracks like, who's got look at tracks like Dad Bod. He mentioned one line where he says, I love my wife like I am Chance. I bet you rap the shit about me and him rap about, but you had to make it out. You never had the chance. All to be fair, the difference is, the subject was brought a thousand times, so I become a little mess. And two of the guys mostly comment, like, last year, they got fucked last year. Maybe chance I have a house of redemption. Who knows when? I don't know. And of course, you know, through most of his album that he referenced Kanye West a lot. Like, a lot. He has to say, he had a song hit my line. You remember about his Chosen Sometimes and versus, you know, all the bullshit in the world. He said that, like, he's disgusted by the news, which, of course, that's logical. Why did I just say that? And of course, because one lyric where he says, I ain't saying this is my Jesus walk. I'm just saying God either talk to the kids in the community outline in chalk. Scared drive-bys when they should be scared of dark. Who's you doing that part? And they say they want messages in rap, rules of art. I am people. Now tear me apart. Okay. And of course, it goes have, like I said, Annalise or a.k.a. Dahlia, you know, the AI from the Kirby's story or something about, like, basically kind of like those, kind of like, you know, her saying, like, every, did you know that I would take, that one took the process of a, what you said, and then some other stuff like, he had Cabo B by Sarah Shepard and Trigon on rotation while making it, which, okay, I mean, of course, he also mentioned, but also inspired by Kanye West, RZA, and Najubis. Which, that's that thing that we say disappears to me. Which, all right, I get that. And of course you got on GP4, which announced the chorus, which samples you and me gonna live in together in perfect harmony. I can hear him calling me, become along with him since HOC. Which the interpolation in the beat is sample, it's a similar form that. Very classic Outkast song, Elevators, Me and You. Which, there's a sample. Let me say, I go up to the original. I woke up to the original. And speaking of Outkast, their influence appears in there too. Like, on track Man I Is, which they got the horn sample from their track, Spotty Adi Dapa Lapa. I cannot, Dapa Lapa, it's a word I cannot fucking say. But yeah, it's that song. And, Also, he mentioned in the lyric above the Gene Flower, which Erykah Badu sampled for her song, Don't You Know, which that got sampled to be, that got sampled too, which, yeah, it's a big sample, extension, like, yeah. Oh, that shit. One song like A to Z and the second half of Logic plays this demo, which he says, why did I play this demo? I'm embarrassed by this shit. Which, I do see why he would be embarrassed by that. I mean, it's not bad, but yeah, it's there. But I will say, while as a replay value, it's there sometimes. But I will say it's still a better listen than the content he made between 2016 to 2019. But we have a solid project from Logic, and on this note, it's very good. He ended very well, and. Oh, he enjoys his life as a dad and Twitch streamer. I guess he used that money to put it to his, you know, his son cost tuition, which, okay, that's smart thing as well. But yeah, we have a solid problem Logic, which of course is very good. And now I go from somebody who's, you know, looking for the future to sadly somebody who doesn't have a future anymore, unfortunately. Yeah. Yes, I'm going to one of the more posthumous projects, which I cover. And I'm going to say this right now. Back in February, when we talked about the January album releases, I talked about Jack Boys, and I mentioned Pop Smoke about his voice. And then, here's the thing. I think we recorded the week he was killed, fortunately. Which I hope I didn't say nothing bad about him, because like I thought his that made me think, I don't know because I don't want to say it like that, but I think I said his voice kind of reminded me of a Rick Ross with a sore throat. At least what I got from it. This is review of Pop Smoke in this album, Shoot for the Stars, Aim for the Moon, which is not designed by Virgil Abloh, because well. You know, the dude to say, hey, let me put $50 in the Black Lives Matter Foundation. It's like, nigga, you are a fashion designer artist that get paid lots of dough. You can pay more than that. You can make a better art. You make better art album more than whatever you put out. But which, they use the roles and shit, which I get. But, this is sort of weird for me to put. Like, I did check out his earlier stuff, like Meet the Woo Volume 1, which I can see why people be into him, like, I do like his delivery, his tone. Like, he's like somebody described him as being a human Black and Mild, very, very rough. Like, his voice does fall on the beat well, which he is like a, you know, drill artist, like, you know, like New York drill, like, you know, the music being like kind of, you know, very, you know, very, like, Junior has been coming up since, you know, since they're doing Chicago and the UK scene, but now it's like New York drill, which, okay, I was digging some stuff to him and Meet the Woo Volume 1. Like, I said Dior is good, which that song appears a lot. The song appears on this album as well. Because it appears on Volume 1, Volume 2, and this album, which, okay, that was a real popular song. I will say I like Meet the Woman at the Point better, but anyway, this is about this album. And I'm going to say this, like, I will say this is something that has more mainstream appeal than those earlier mixtape days, because at least Volume 1, maybe Volume 2 had more, have a bit of that mainstream type taste, but I will say this is more of something that will get people in there. Like you have like him going to variety of different type of sounds, like not just a drill shit, but, you know, some tracks for the ladies. Like, there was a track called Something Special, which he interpolates this Fabulous track into You, which it seems kind of weird. I won't say weird, but I know that song well, and the beat that as well, because the beat that he was there too is like, I keep thinking he's singing that, but it's like, okay, that's kind of weird, but all right, it's something different, which I can appreciate. I will say, even though I know it's a Pop Smoke album, and I just expect buzzing him, like, I will say, I kind of wanted more Pop Smoke, even though I know what happened, but because, like, his presence is always welcoming. Like, I like his delivery. I like his grip voice. I like the way he raps the beat on these tracks. Mainly because the features are kind of very, with a man, they're uninteresting. Which, the dude has 3 Quavo features. Hmm. And that one Tiger, and the one verse from Tiger on West Coast shit. Yeah, that's Bazura. Did you get my drift? And I will say, like, and of course got people like, but like both babies, Little and Duh. He just got one appearance from this dude named King Combs, which I'm guessing, I'm guessing that's from I don't know, Son of Diddy or somebody, which I kind of get. And of course you got the one track, The Woo, with 50 Cent and Roddy, which was okay. I mean, I get why the 50 Cent feature, considering the dude is like produced the album, and what if 50 was, if 50 did try to, you know, take him under, you know, take Possible under his wing. I think he said 50 Cent like Possible better rapper than he 50 does, which yeah, your own son likes the other rapper more than you do, which, I mean, that should be normal. And of course, I mean, instead of 50, like, he got influence of Mini Man on Got It On Me, which, all right, that was good. He got a good impression of that song. And I do like on the song Gangsters, which I did mention that, yeah, there was a diss against 6ix9ine, which, you know what? That explains why I think he did what he did. But yes, a diss against 6ix9ine is always welcome. Just, yeah. And what I'll say, like, overall, this project it's okay, it's fine, it does... Like I said, it does show Pop Smoke more in a mainstream type sort of way, and it is sort of, you know, bumming out that man, that this dude who got, well, he was taken too early at the age of what, 20? Like, yeah, he was younger than all of us, and that's why he would have went far. He could have went far. Like, have one last track he was talking about, like, he's trying to change the game, which, okay, I can admire that. I can admire that he may not be the, you know, I'm not saying he's all lyrical and shit, but it does bring good sound on that, kind of makes me bump through his shit a bit, but yeah, it's an okay album, unfortunately, the last album. I will say, I did not check out the deluxe edition because y'all didn't need that many tracks. Like, no one needs, like, you got 15 more tracks, like, okay, no, like, no, I mean, I know I said one more possible, but y'all could have just saved, I don't know, I want to say save it for another album, but I don't want to turn into, no, you know, trying to cash in on his death. Like, I don't know, I guess they wanted to call out on there, but yeah. Okay, and now to move into a, you know, a better one. It's Griselda time! West Side Gun with Fly Guys and Awesome God 2. The sequel to the album that I was okay with last year. Shit, was last year. And I gotta say, I like it better than the first one. But I will say, there's not much to stick to me, to be honest. Like, I still like it, but it didn't, like, it's not a per situation where it's like, there's some tracks I love, there's tracks I like, tracks I love. Like, there's tracks that I'm okay with, but it's like, okay, it's typical, you know, it's typical West Side Gun shit. Which, looking because them dudes be working a lot. Like, they be coming a lot of projects this year. Hell, I think West Side got an album coming next month or something. I
mean, which Wikipedia told me was coming out this month. Seriously, whoever edits the hip hop releases section of Wikipedia needs to be slapped in the face for inaccuracy. But continue.
Yeah, I think next one would be either him or Conway. Which it comes September, and I think since Bodie James is gonna have his new Griselda record with a second produced by Jay Versace of all people. Which okay,
there he is again.
Yep. And okay, anyway, for this project, I say it's all right. This track that I fuck like. I like the intro he did with A.A. Rashid, which I like that dude's voice. He always got a lot of like references to his names, like he got in these tracks like this, or references to like sports names, like he got tracks like Michael Irvin, Jose Canseco, Sadu, I want to say Steve Burr, and I guess somebody named Bubba Chuck. I'm not the sports guy. I don't know that much about this shit. But yeah, like I miss a lot. I say smaller or maybe at least smaller fanfare because like at least for features at least, like he got somebody named Stove God Cooks. Yeah, that's the guy's name, Stove God Cooks. In most of his features. And alright, I like the dude was decent. Also got somebody, a new Griselda member, Armani Caesar, and she was alright too. She was alright too. I will say the track I listened to the most of this track is Bluffs vs. Wires, which has been the Butcher and Boy James, which I just keep playing back and forth because I simply love that track. I just fucking love that track. And that's what I was gonna say about this album. Like this one's just okay. I say between this and Paper Paris, I still say I like Paper Paris more. I was gonna say that one's gonna be maybe my top list. This one probably won't be. But I still say like, yeah, these guys keep on delivering a lot of content because like you know that earlier, like a while ago on Twitter, I retweeted a post that says Griselda versus TDE, which the Griselda would be the fat cat that Garfield eats, and TDE is Bugs Bunny, well, in a skeleton, but you know that shit. And people know I'm not pinned against them. Both make quality shit. Alright? Let's get out of the way. Griselda and TDE, both quality shit. They just got it in different ways. I go with both. Remember that. Okay, and all right, and now the other sort of big one I want to talk about, the one that got a lot of dislikes from the melon, Mike, Way of the World, and yes, check out the review of him review of that, check the dislikes of that, and yes is the red flannel, which. Yeah, I disagree on that. I disagree on that. But yeah, I gotta say, those know who Mike is. Like, yeah, we talked about him a few times. Like, he appeared on the Adult Swim singles list. Well, this year, I think that this ended recently, y'all. But yeah, this album from Mike. All right, okay, this is something that I would dig. Like, I like the lo-fi Ashex sounds production, which of course is good. Of course, that would like me. It does talk about some of the last. The issues that Whoop does carry that title, like, you know, Way of the World, like shit about his mom's passing, like living life in New York and all that shit. It's just very, you know, mix of conscious, glitchy, experimental hip hop that do kind of fuck with too. And even the feature from Earl Sweatshirt on the last track, All Star, which I think is something that most people been wanting from him because, like, I think they, You know, I think they say Mike was influenced by Earl's frustration, which I do see the Earl influence on here, and this album is pretty good. Actually, I mean, I listened to it a couple three to four times, and I gotta say this, I will say I probably listen to more of it later on, but I gotta say this was a pretty good album. Like definitely found Twisted Pig ever since discovering this dude on Adult Swim, which. Did check back his earlier work, which of course was solid as well. But yeah, like those tracks, I do fuck over here. Like I say, I like All Star. I will say those tracks are Way of the Word, which is basically a revamped version of Nothing to Say, which she covered on the episode of Decibel Boost once. Like I do select tracks like Alert or 222 or Where's Home, Get Rich Quick Scheme. Yeah, that's all tracks I do like on here. And it's relatively short too, like maybe 30 minutes or so. So it took to listen to it, but I definitely fuck with this album. It's definitely a solid listen. Gotta get a check out. And now basically the rest of the checks, because I'm gonna be quick with this because I'm gonna be quick with this shit. First the EPs. You got Kitty with Charm and Mirror. I mean, look, we're Kitty at this point. It's a good old 90s sound and pop shit that we all know and love, and it sounds excellent. It sounds glorious. It sounds something you listen on the beach. You can go to beaches, and I mean in a safe way, not the shit y'all fuckers be doing. But yes, the Kitty EP, which is contributed to a cause, which you know you can buy a Bandcamp, which of course yeah, support them off. But yeah, it's some good shit. Buy that shit. Joey Badass, the Light Pack, a three-track EP with him and some bars, and you know what, it's solid. I will say the mumble rap information line, which I get, you're trying to rap us off, but don't turn to one of those rappers that always talk about, that always go lyrical versus mumble and then ends up being corny and ever, but other than that, it's some solid shit, like, you even got one show with Pusha T on it, and you know what? Yeah, it's pretty good too. But yeah, I said this one to check out too. IDK. IDK and Friends 2. The Basketball County soundtrack. I kinda wish I did a review of this, but I don't know, I was out of mind. But anyway, this album, yeah, it got, you know, lots of fucking bangers from IDK. Like, hey, yeah, they all go well. We'll say out of the features he got with, I will say the one ASAP Ferg was pretty good. Denzel Curry was, you know, pretty good. Probably I like the one with PNB Rock on it, which I'm surprised by that shit because I know no fuck with him. But and of course you got the one track 495, which got Vigo Nasty and all the motherfuckers that to be the name. But yeah, this is another solid EP mix, which is y'all got from them. And yeah, once again, it's pretty solid. Okay, and now I got the album from the one album from that I think many people I think praise got some talk about Blue in Exile Miles, the one that everybody was talking all about. I gotta say about it, like this shit it's pretty good. Like it's very fucking long as fuck. Like I mean it's long as fuck, but I don't feel the length of it. Like it looks like for you know these jazzy hip hop vibes, which. I can mess with, but yeah, it's a pretty solid album. Telltale the Album, on the other hand, which, let me remind you, it consists of 5 EPs, which are titled Studio A, L, B, U, and M, which, this one is very long as fuck. And I felt the length of this. I'm not gonna say it's decent for what, it's decent for who the target was, it's like, you could have just, I don't know, maybe did the album part one, and then the album part two, at least in the other half of the year. At least I fall for not knowing about this shit earlier. But yeah, this album is not like Rock with John Taylor. I will give it a last album, the one which was with the Wyoming session shit from 2 years ago, which. I think she said she hated it, her album, which, damn. Then I guess she gets your own toughest critic. But yeah, but that was I wouldn't sit that long with it. Just saying. Okay, we got a project with Terrace Martin, Robert Glasper, Knife Funder, and Kamasi Washington, titled Dinner Party. What is again? That's another EP album, which this goes through some very short EP with some jazzy hip hop shit. And yes, it's really like the Voltron combo of this shit. It's plenty good. It's really good. I say yes. It's worth a recommendation. Chloe and Halle, since you mentioned Beyonce earlier, this one is their sort of protégés, I think, since they signed to her label, with Ungodly Hour. I mean, if you listen to the R&B in 2000s, well, they fit that. They seem like music that my sister would listen to way back in the day, which is fine. It's okay. It's okay for what it is. But it's a very alright album. Leave it there. Leave it at that. And we have we have Kyle. See when I'm famous. I forgot about him for a minute. I forgot him for a minute. I know he did some things with that one show with Carl Jones on Fuse for some reason. But yeah, he has to write an album out with that. And I gotta be honest, it's the usual Kyle you heard from his last album. It got that pop rap shit to him. But I will say it's kind of forgettable. It does have this usual signature of him being jolly and happy and you have a chant to him with some trap shit added to it. Like, I say this, unlike Lil Yachty, he's still got something that makes him, although he's kind of cheap, to be honest. It does sound very cheap. It's put together in a manner of, I don't know, minutes. Of course, you got features from Tiger for some reason. We Go Nasty, which, okay. Too Short, alright. But this album is, it's good for what it is. It's that pop rap that they still be doing. Maybe it's not as big as he was a few years back. But, it is what it is. And I just accidentally pressed the button. Okay, and you know what? I'm in on that. That's all right. I got there because I need to get that out.
All right. How much time we're running? We're running up an hour, 3 minutes at this point. And I got my releases that I got to talk about. So let's see how fast it takes me to do this shit. So starting off with my top picks for the past month. The shortest of these is going to start off with this new Trash Talk EP, Squalor. Still waiting for a new full length from these guys, one of my favorite hardcore bands currently active right now. But in the meantime, to set us along, we have a pretty sweet EP courtesy of them. And of course, producer Kenny Beats jumping in as well. Short and sweet, 8.5 minutes across 5 songs. What you would expect from these guys based on their past works. The vocals are very shouty and intense. The drums pound away in the expected aggro manner with these tom-driven D-beats, massive grooves, and even some blast beats here and there. With a lot of really great sounding tones, especially in the snare and kick. The bass has a nice saturated tone and the guitars abound with intense distortion and feedback. Gotta admit, Kenny Beats makes for a really interesting producer choice. Despite primarily being known for hip-hop and stuff like that, he slots in right at home here, understanding how to make everything really shine as far as the group's musical strengths. And of course, that closing track, Kicking and Screaming, is a fucking banger that kills every time. So yeah, if you got less than 10 minutes to kill, here's a good EP for you. Anyway, moving on to a couple of curiosity checkouts here. First off, as I said, Foxjaw, this band I saw recommended by a friend of mine who described them as, I've heard various comparisons. He specifically described them as, hey, it's kind of like if Brand New was a bit more experimental and not fronted by a predatory dipshit. Bet y'all forgot about that, didn't ya? Well, I didn't. And also, if you look at various press and stuff, especially the description on Spotify, they've been compared to bands like At The Drive-In, Biffy Clyro, and even some Cave-In. Again, it's been a while since I've listened to those bands, so I'd have to go back and double-check. But there's certainly a very experimental tinge to this album's general sort of post-hardcore aesthetic. That's the best grounding point I could think of. Using a lot of really catchy rhythms and songwriting, while finding room for stuff like Off-Kilter guitar melodies similar to acts like At the Drive-In. You have songs like You Don't Drink a Unicorn's Blood with a very slow tempo progression that mix ominous clean verses with a lot of sludgier choruses, kind of like, you know, the heavier side of Cave-In. And then there's songs like Half House and Teething and Owl is a Cat with Wings, which kind of have more the space rock side of Cave-In, like in their early days and whatnot. It's got a really good ear for strange, drifting guitar melodies and vocal rhythms that help to liven up the proceedings, especially when songs like Bats for Bleeding have a steady 6-8 groove and these really strange keyboard runs that carry tinges of like Queens of the Stone Age as well in there. So yeah, if you're looking for a good post-hardcore album, you know, really experimental with some really cool musical ideas in there, there you go. Moving on to the next one here. So yeah, it seemed like a lot of hype when this new Hum album, Inlet, just kind of shadow dropped on Bandcamp after like 22 years of inactivity from them in the studio front. Hum, I actually went back and listened to their whole discography. They're considered a pretty mandatory staple of 90s alternative rock, best known for the single Stars, which was famously riffed on by Beavis and Butthead and still their biggest hit overall. Listening to their older albums to sort of contextualize myself for this one, they feel like one of the most quintessential 90s bands imaginable. Like, if you try to imagine the general trends of alternative rock and even alternative metal in that era, Hum is a band that definitely comes to mind with their particular brand of downbeat alternative metal and shoegaze. Hell, Deftones claim to take influence from them from their debut album Adrenaline, and that doesn't seem to be any different with this album, which sounds like a distinct modernization of their classic sound. Taking songwriting that has these steady, slow to mid-tempos, these pleasant grooves created from really bass-heavy guitar riffs with a lot of floating ethereal shoegaze guitar melodies riding over top to brighten things up and add a nice moodiness to everything, with, of course, the vocal performances sounding very characteristically monotone and downbeat, as you would expect with this kind of songwriting. It's a pretty long album. I think it's only like 8 or 9 songs that often run anywhere from like 5 to 9 minutes. They're very lengthy and let these atmospheres build and envelop the mix as it goes on, especially tracks like Desert Rambler and Folding, which let clean passages flow on for quite a bit of time that are sandwiched between these more heavy, heavy, soaring rock passages and whatnot. It actually manages to sustain itself for a lot longer than you think if you've never listened to this kind of stuff. So if you need a really great record that you can just like vibe to, then yeah, this has some really strong material to it. And last of my curiosity checkouts here, at least for this part here, Arm & Hammer, this new album from them, Shrines. This is a hip-hop duo consisting of rapper and producer Ellucid and rapper Billy Woods, who we've talked about here and there through his works with More Mother, and of course appearing on that recent Preservation album. So for a first-time impression, I can say I really dig the production style of the record. That's something that probably hooked me more than anything else. The vibe of a lot of the beats is very dreamlike, with a lot of these songs built around like samples and rhythms that sound like they're chopped and mixed into these very hazy, dreamlike, stuttering, repetitious loops with elements of like soul and funk and whatnot. For example, the opening track, Bitter Cassava, has production courtesy of Earl Sweatshirt, who himself has a guest verse on a later track that I'll probably bring up. And you have songs like Leopards, which has kind of a downbeat garage rock funk thing going on. King Tubby, that kind of feels like drunkenly walking down a neon-lit street at night, barely conscious. And yeah, the ethereal piano beats on the aforementioned Earl Sweatshirt song Ramses 2, which also, speaking of More Mother, has her appearing on here as well, has this kind of ethereal piano beat playing off these aquatic garbled sounds in the background. My favorite beat, if I had to pick one, would probably be the track Pommel Horse. Believe it or not, it takes its sample from a track called The Heavenly Music Corporation, a song originally written by two people, and of all people, electronic icon and pioneer Brian Eno, and Robert Fripp of King Crimson. Yeah, imagine that. Sampling from one of the King Crimson dudes on a rap song. Except, you know, I honestly kind of like this way better than the other big example we could probably name. But, and it has this really great, again, dreamlike flow bolstered by the really distinct rapping styles of both MCs. While the lyrical style can best be described as kind of stream of conscious with like wordplay and ideas that kind of flow into one another in a way that creates a bigger picture that can maybe be a bit hard to grasp if you're not actively working on it. Like, just to sample a bit from Pommel Horse's lyrics, peak optimization of Earth, digest the meat, scream therapy, coaxing melodies from the noise, you know, I never lost my song. Yeah, that kind of lyrical flow. There are still distinct presences, as Elucid tends to be a bit more rapid fire and low pitch and slurred a bit, while Billy is often a bit slower but has a much more pronounced vocal presence, although they do know how to like flex their skills beyond just those stock personality types, you know, amping up the flow of their bars and just their vocal presence on the album. But yeah, this is, if you're looking for some really damn fine hip-hop, this is something like really cool and different, and I'm gonna have to find some time to go back to the past few Arm & Hammer albums. This is fine shit. But now we can delve into more of my usual territory. So yeah, here we are with a brand new Ghost Inside album, self-titled, 5 years after the tragic crash that nearly ended everyone's lives and, you know, caused a great deal of injury. So many hard-fought years of recovery, and now we have this new album making its intentions known right off the bat with the album opener, Still Alive, because they very much are, in which the band sounds like they haven't skipped a beat since Dear Youth, which I believe was 7 or 6 years ago. Yeah, but yeah, it sounds like it picks up right from there. The drumming work is fast, furious, and tight, saying a lot considering the drummer lost one of his legs in the crash. The guitars stomp ahead with furious melodic hardcore grooving chugs, and the vocals are very aggressive and intense, with plenty of gang shouts making declarations of finding the willpower to survive and overcome tragedy. Similarly, The Outcast uses that groove-driven nature of it to declare that anything is possible, I am unstoppable. And even the album closer, Aftermath, is pretty much a similar, like, bookend where it triumphantly declares that despite all that they've gone through over the past years, they're not going to let this phase them. It's, if you're looking for an album that's a bit more positive in its demeanor, this is one that's definitely about, like, finding the strength to overcome adversity. I'd say it's almost kind of like the polar opposite of that Spanish Love Songs album. But even while it emphasizes that mix of melodic hardcore and triumphant lyrical attitude, there definitely are some outliers that take a bit more of a bitter tone. In particular, the 1-2 punch of Pressure Point, which is my favorite track on the album, and Overexposure are songs about not letting toxic, destructive, you know, parasitic individuals pull you down and keep you from achieving your best in life. Both of these songs kind of hitting a personal note for me, given reasons. There maybe are a few minor down points on the record where it gets a bit too 2000s butt rock for my own taste. But other than that, that doesn't stop the record from being a really solid listen, showing that even the most horrifying tragedy can't stop anyone from finding the will to, you know, go on. I think if I may quote Bennett the Sage from his recently posted Barefoot Gin review, if you can move, you can move forward. And now moving on to something a bit more overall bitter and intense. This debut album from End, Splinters from an Ever-Changing Face. They had an EP out like 3 years ago, but this is their official full-length debut. Definitely hyped up a lot in the hardcore and metal scenes. This is a supergroup consisting of Brendan Murphy, vocalist of the band Counterparts, vocalist Will Putney of Fit for an Autopsy on guitar as well, ex-Shai Hulud guitarist Gregory Thomas, one of the staples of Florida metalcore back in the 2000s, Reign Supreme bassist Jay Pepito, and Andrew McInaney on drums, formerly of Structures. And right away, this album hits like a fucking truck, throwing out massive, saturated guitar and bass grooves, heavy on low end, slamming drums, busting out tom fills, breakdowns and blast beats all across, with harsh layered shouting vocals permeating every section of the mix. No nook and cranny is left unfilled in this fucking audio mixing. Throughout much of the album, tracks like Covet Not, Absence, Evening Arms, and The Reach of Resurrection showcase a really good mixing of everyone's backgrounds, melding to a T. It just has this distinct energy of being able to fuse death metal stylings with more hardcore elements, bouncing back and forth between the two with, like, you know, the death metal blast beats and discordant tremolo guitar riffs, with more hardcore-oriented grooves and breakdowns and all that sick stuff, with never a moment of silence. But on the other end, you have tracks like Hesitation Wounds and the album closer Sands of Sleep, which are basically these really saturated, menacing, extended, you know, beatdown, breakdown type of songs, bringing the tempo down several notches and just letting this really ominous atmosphere build throughout. With the latter even containing the album's most melodic segments as a way of unnervingly counteracting the heaviness and everything. You know, to be completely honest, for me, this is kind of what that Umbra Vitae record that we talked about a couple months back really should have been, in all honesty. This has the heaviness, and it also brings a lot of really interesting rhythms and songwriting to the table. Yeah, this is good shit. And speaking of good shit, of course, leave it to Boris to drop a Bandcamp exclusive album, you know, originally on the first of the month when Bandcamp does the Friday things, called No. Just like them to never skip a year with a new album. This one, of course, takes the mildly different approach from their usual material. While the album opener Genesis would have you believe this is more typical droning, lengthy sludge like a couple of their previous albums have been, this record overall is a much different story, taking their sound into territory more influenced by hardcore punk and some crossover thrash. Hell, if you look on their Twitter, you'll see they post, like, spoken comments and whatnot from, like, a variety of various hardcore legends, including Henry Rollins, of all people. I guess he had opinions on this album. From the track Antigone onward, the album abounds with songs that are more immediately gratifying than usual, with their really driving tempos, gritty shouted vocals, power chord heavy riffs, vibes of stuff like, you know, Black Flags, A Minor Threat, bits of Suicidal Tendencies in there. On tracks like Non-Blood Lore and Kiki Noe, with tracks like Temple of Hatred bringing in some noise and blast beats to mix things up. There's even a bit of more experimentation on here, as you hear in the track HXCXHXC Perforation Line, which adds in some really nice and melodic ambient atmospheric guitars overlaying on top to kind of sound like the song Luna, which I believe is off of a new album. I know it came out first on that Metal Swim compilation from the first one from 2010. And just to drive the point here further, there's even a cover of a song originally written by longstanding Japanese hardcore icons Gudon. Most of the songs clock in about 2 to 3 minutes with burst after burst of fierce energy, with a couple of detours into more typical droning sludgy tracks like Zerkalo and the lead single Loveless. Not much else to add, it's Boris doing hardcore, let it assault your senses because it is incredibly spicy shit. And now to move on to some even more abrasive spicy shit. You like jazz? Because Imperial Triumphant likes jazz, and they are once again here to let you know through their strange blend of freeform jazz improvisation and avant-garde black metal with Alphaville. So, yeah, picking up from where Vile Luxury left off in 2018, this album once again brings up really haunting sonic miasma in full force as it builds these kind of disorienting atmospheres through its mix of suffocating, bellowing vocals, really unnerving and bizarrely constructed guitar melodies and chord progressions, and a lot of really spastic freeform drum beats that basically border on jazz improvisation. There's especially moments like, say, the swarm buzzing guitars of Rotted Futures that still freak me out. The songwriting, of course, mixes things up with slower passages and songs like Excelsior, which even closes out with a trippy industrial noise segment, the Japanese Taiko drum breaks in the track City Swine, which has a really nice guest appearance from Meshuggah's Thomas Hake in a moment that I can only really describe as blackened djent. If you know that part, what I'm talking about, you know. And even Atomic Age, which even opens with like a sample of a barbershop quartet a la Fallout and has some really cutting, screaming guest vocals to counteract the more low-end bellowing. Like with previous albums, you get the sense that the group's home state of New York, and New York City in particular, plays a very integral role in the sound and how a lot of it is constructed. For example, like, as I said, the barbershop quartet sample that opens up Atomic Age, and you have moments like Excelsior, where intermixed with that industrial outro, you kind of have the samples of what sounds like a crowd going through the New York subway system. And, you know, just the album in general kind of having the sound that feels very suffocating in the way that a metropolitan cityscape would. And, of course, for some of the more experimental jazz tendencies where you have stuff like, say, actual saxophones and trumpets in songs like Transmission to Mercury, which also kind of has this lone piano and saxophone solo section that sounds like a quiet night in a New York jazz club. You're just sitting there pensively observing the people walking in the streets. Yeah, this is very suffocating, menacing, dark, abrasive, and all of that sweet, sweet, good shit. But maybe you want something that, while rhythmically complex, is more pleasant on the ears, melodically and rhythmically speaking. Well, after 7 years since their last proper full length, Protest the Hero, the Canadian prog metal legends, well, I say legends, but, you know, great prog metal band from Canada, are back with their newest album, Palimpsest. I guess technically 4 years if you count the Pacific Myth EP in terms of releases overall, and as usual, this is an album with a lot going on. But first, the music. It's very much a continuation of where Volition was. It's really extremely tight in its rhythms with very precise use of off-kilter syncopations in the drum beats, the guitar noodling, both rhythmically and even melodically, keeping things as lush and elegant as they are technical. The Canary is a great example, using plenty of groovy segments and rapid-fire D-beats, blending with, like, synths and strings to add, like, these very beautiful melodies that mesh well with the technicality underneath. And, of course, Rhodey Walker's, as always, immaculate vocal performance, you know, soaring to the point of damn near operatic, like on the song From the Sky, while the pulse-pounding all hands gives him a chance to show off more of his aggressive, you know, metal scream vibes at play. Alongside some really just great interplay between the rhythm and lead guitars, how they all play off to each other. And similarly, Fireside really sees him stretching his vocal endurance to the max with a lot of these rapid-fire shouted segments that ride the fast rhythm of the D-beats. And tracks like Soliloquy, which has an unusually triumphant ending for a song about the life and death of American criminal Babyface Nelson, famed associate of John Dillinger. By the way, speaking of that, yeah, this is an album with things to say if you want to talk about where the layering comes in. In particular, the album lyrics seem very influenced by the notion of history is written by the winners, and how those winners often use disingenuous framing to omit certain unpleasantries and manipulate history to their advantage. Hell, the album title itself is an indication, as, fun bit of trivia, a palimpsest is a manuscript from a book or scroll, like a page or something, where the original text is scraped or washed off so that it can be repurposed as the basis of another document. If you could see where we're going for this. For example, the song From the Sky, it's a song about the Hindenburg disaster and how I was today years old when I learned that the Hindenburg was manufactured in Nazi Germany. Did you know that? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Well, I did, because I'm a weirdo who likes to study disasters, and that's another album I forgot about, so I could have had up to 21 albums. Jeez.
And that's the thing, you wouldn't know that because most of the most famous, well-known pictures of the Hindenburg and the accompanying disaster always obscure the site of it that had the giant swastika. So, yeah, I try looking that up. Tell me what you find. Going back to the track Soliloquy, immediately following that is a track called Reverie, which deals more directly with the legacy of John Dillinger, and in particular, using it as a jumping-off point about the for-profit prison system and how it often makes criminals and criminal cases so much worse than they otherwise would have been. Like, you know, a lot of people know John Dillinger for his robberies and his famous quotation, "I'll be the meanest bastard you ever see when I get out of here." But you have to remember, when he got arrested for that, the crime that he committed was robbing a grocery store of $50, primarily because he was having difficulty finding employment. Now, I'm not saying John Dillinger is a good guy at all, but if you look at, you know, any and all criminal, you know, case analysis in the world, especially from a psychological perspective, you find that most crimes are often committed by a lack of access to resources, often stemming from poverty, because, you know, America's run by capitalist shitheels. So, you know, again, history leaves stuff like this out, and perhaps the most topical in this regard would be the song Little Snakes, which is about the history of Mount Rushmore and how that territory was originally designated to the Sioux tribe in 1868, before America found gold in them there hills and decided, you know what, we're gonna go back on this treaty, you all have to get the fuck out. Forgotten in the shadows, cast by celebrated busts, lies a site depicting history's ignoble bloodlust. There might be flowers in the windows, but only ashes in the streets. Yeah, that's... I don't know if they had the foresight to see that, or if they were just going off previous, you know, protests about Confederate monuments and stuff like that, but maybe they're a bit more on the pulse than most people might like to believe. So, yeah, good on Protest the Hero for, you know, calling out the way history is often disingenuously framed to meet the ends of those in power. Good shit. Moving on. Of course, keeping in the realm of progressive metal, Haken, Virus, the follow-up to their fantastic 2018 release, Vector. Definitely following up on similar themes as the album opener, Prosthetic, which again is still one of my favorite songs of the year, mixing up heavy Dream Theater-style guitar grooves with really great Devin Townsend-esque melodies with its own dynamic songwriting flair. It feels like it continues from the same sort of narrative conceit of, like, a patient, presumably in a psychiatric ward, and their, shall we say, less than noble doctor that's looking after them. I mean, you kind of get the feeling from that chorus, which is still, you know, I still hum that chorus to myself a lot. The one that goes, I don't want to talk about it anymore. So sick of these questions. I've heard them before. I don't know what it is you want to hear. The more I stare, the less becomes clear. Then you have tracks like Invasion, which, you know, reaching more across the contemporary prog spectrum, it's the best Leprous song that Leprous hasn't written in a while, with its really magnificent vocal performance and arrangements, these subtle djent grooves in the verses with some much more heavier segments, and just really great song structuring and rhythms overall. And yeah, much like with Vector, an overriding theme with this album is, you know, like mental health, from, you know, the overriding presence of the abusive doctor in the pseudo-narrative, two descriptions of destructive relationships and behavior, such as in The Strain, a song where it describes a person who is callously taking advantage of those around them to ascend to a higher state, using intensity and melody to contrast the mood with a sense of regret and condemnation, calling back to that Cockroach King entity who apparently has been around since their 2013 album The Mountain. And of course, this idea is expanded upon further in the five-part Messiah Complex suite, which goes all over the place with plenty of dense grooves and blast beats, complex melodies and rhythms and all that stuff, and even some nice video gamey synths in there, because, you know, you gotta have some fun with that sometimes. And of course, it brings that, again, lyrical theme of the Cockroach King's ascent to the forefront, making references to him climbing up an ivory tower while ignoring the plight of those around you. And yeah, again, like, listening to this back to back with Vector, these are just two of damn great albums released in a row and two of the best prog records you're about to hear anywhere. So yeah, Virus, check it out. And now for me, the album that's kind of been my biggest highlight across the past couple months, mostly because it's been like one of the biggest moods. Yeah, this new Acacia Strain compilation, which, you know, features a couple new songs aside from the 10 that have been released so far, Slow Decay, and yeah, a bit of a surprising amount of activity from Acacia Strain in the past year or so. Remember, they shadow dropped It Comes in Waves in literally the last five or so days of 2019, and of course the ramp up of BP slowly compiling into this one, and right off the bat it slams you in the face with the menacing guitar melodies and fast grooving chugs of Feed a Pigeon, Breed a Rat, containing the familiar elements with, like, those down-tuned single-note guitar grooves, those fast double-kick runs ramping up and adding a lot of energy to Vincent Bennett's furious vocal shouts, especially that repetitious closing sentiment, "It feels like hell." Certainly does. Crippling Poison is a steady, groomy jam whose lyrics feel, while similarly angry, a lot more sorrowful in a sense, as Vincent shouts about feeling physically and emotionally unwell and being overwhelmed by the state of things in a very blunt fashion. Seeing God ramps up the overly dramatic bitterness of their lyrics to the expected extremes, bolstered by really nice D-beat driven high energy tempo, and lyrics like, "We didn't sell our souls, we gave them up for free. We fear the dark, but it's the light that exposes the true horrors of this world." Similarly, you have The Lucid Dream, which switches things up between steady grooves and fast fill-driven rhythms and tremolo riffs, with some really nice guest vocals, courtesy of Jess Nix, adding a nice, sharp bite to the proceedings to offset Vincent's more guttural style. And when the beats go into halftime with a lot of really rapid kicks and nice punchy ride near the end, that's some really good shit. Of course, the album with the track with the longest title here, "I Breathed in the Smoke Deeply, It Tasted Like Death and I Smiled," is this pummelingly slow, menacing jam of a song that sounds like a genuine apocalypse. And China Masta is probably one of the most quintessential deathcore bangers possible. You know, if you try to imagine any deathcore band at all, you're probably imagining this song to some extent. And just as a quick aside here for a second, the production overall on this album sounds great. The guitars have a nice saturated tone. There's really nice dynamic mixing between the instrumentation, the vocals, and all that. And this album probably has some of the most satisfying drumming sounds I've heard on a record in a while, especially with a really great, crisp, snappy snare tone throughout. And in particular, the song 1000 Painful Stings, which also features guest vocals from former I Wrestled the Bear Once vocalist Courtney LaPlante, showcases the production as its most dynamic, with the way the vocals and guitars fade into the background and the foreground at full force, maintaining its ominous grooves, and the drums having, again, that satisfying punchiness to the ride cymbal, especially in the second verse. Yeah, this is doing it for me immensely, as I said, as total mood, and an album that just feels like this year in general. Like, let me put it like this. Spanish love songs provide the bleak emotional nuance of millennial life in the contemporary era. Run the Jewels cuts to the chase with direct, biting social commentary. But sometimes what you need is a vicious, primal scream at a world that feels like it's just given up and is never going to get any better. To quote the aforementioned 1000 Painful Stings, we called, no one answered. Total fucking failures. So, yeah, as you can tell, I'm probably in a mood right now. But anyway, going into the quick round, surprisingly enough, I don't necessarily have any low lights here. First off, this new Logic album, No Pressure. And let me just say, thank God Logic was able to get his dignity back before going out, so to speak, to his new career of Twitch streaming and being a dad, turning out the strongest record he's done in a while, offering up a very detailed and, at times, mostly sincere meditation on the whole of his career with really strong bars of production. I'm not sure if this retirement's going to be permanent, but I will say, as a follow-up to Under Pressure and a sort of end for now, this album makes a good bookend to this period of Logic, as we can call it for now. Moving on to the new Lamb of God album, self-titled, it's more Lamb of God, as you can expect. If you've ever listened to most Lamb of God albums before, then you know what you're in for here. The very confrontational lyric attitude, commenting on just how fucked various facets of modern society are, especially on a political front. Plenty of thrash and groove-heavy metal riffs and pure aggression and attitude, with Art Cruz slotting in really nicely to the group's trademark sound. He knows how to keep up the grooves with the best of them. And moving on from that, this new Arca project, I think it's Kick One. I think she might be doing a part two to this at some point. But anyway, Arca bringing, once again, an interesting set of really noisy but catchy avant-garde electronic dance beats with a lot of drone and glitchy elements and digressions, and even some choice collaborations with the likes of Sophie, Rosalia, and Bjork too. So, you know, you have an idea what you're getting in for there. This Grey Days album, Amends. Again, not sure how it stacks up in the grand scheme of whatever they've done before. I think they might have, like, two albums aside from this, if I recall. Yeah, B12's still a really bad choice for a lead single. It's still giving me We Didn't Start the Fire flashbacks. Yeah, but I know what I'm about to say about this album sounds really weird, but this is really the honest image I got when listening to us. This is what Linkin Park would sound like if Linkin Park were trying to be Evanescence. Take that as you will. Of course, there was this new Proto-Mortar album, Ultimate Success Today, newest project from these veterans of contemporary noise rock and art rock, maintains some of the more stream-of-conscious song structure and lyricisms from previous records. This album in particular kind of having themes of, you know, human mortality and related topics, while simultaneously offering some of their more straightforwardly structured and more tuneful jams yet. Yeah, it does get noisy, but not as noisy as previous releases. There's definitely more melody as it would be on here, so yeah. And last but certainly not least, this mini LP from Jesse titled Never. Really dreamy, droning, coated in walls of layered synths and electronics that are very pleasing and soothing in a way that only Jesse's particular brand of industrial could really be. And yeah, it's pretty much everything I listened to this past month. No real bad albums that I had to check out or made myself check out. So yeah, with all that out of the way, I think we're just about ready to close things out for this month. Maybe next time we probably shouldn't make the mistake of skipping a month. At least maybe.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Learn that the hard way. But anyway, thank you for listening to this month's album roundup. As always, you know where to find us in places like Google Play and iTunes. Subscribe there. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at SuroRezo. Like us on Facebook. Check out the website, SuroResolution.com. You know, for this podcast, podcast ONA, written reviews, and all that good stuff. Be sure to jump into our Discord chat so you can shitpost about Applebee's. And shout out to our producer, Mr. E, for graciously letting me use his music for this podcast. Links to his shit down in the description. Well, we're going to be taking a brief break for a couple weeks because I'm going to be unavailable to do podcast recordings. But when we're back, we'll have, of course, those good old decibel boost shenanigans that we're known for. So, until then, peace out, y'all. And wear a mask!
Yes!
Go on vacation!